come with me on a voyage into the heart of darkness. Now, the reason the Three Rivers race only happens once a year is because it takes 11 and a half months to erase the last one from your memory. And that can only be done with a very carefully managed regime of intensive counselling combined with mind-altering hallucinogenic tequila with a worm in it and very large pills the size of deck quoits that are meant for treating very, very ill shire horses. Fortunately, these are taken orally, the pills that is, not the horses, but that's about the only good news. If you take this medication religiously, three times a day, and it's possible praying may also help, while permanently connected via crocodile clips to a car battery and wearing rose-tinted spectacles, you'll find that after about 11 and a half months, the full horror of last year's Three Rivers race has receded to become a warm, fuzzy blur. In fact, by then, all of life is just a warm, fuzzy blur, punctuated only by occasional moistness and involuntary dribbling. And it's round about then that self-confessed, selfish legend Bob Smith phoned to tell you that you've been signed up for the next race in 2 weeks' time. And it's too late to withdraw because he's already bought you a Three Rivers race tumbler made of real glass. That's you, committed, literally. And before you know it, you're back at Horning Sailing Club on the Norfolk Broads where, as soon as you get out of your car, Bob gaffer tapes a pen to your hand and helps you sign an inch-thick dossier of documents that he explains are just formalities. Now, there are other ways to recruit crew, but they leave marks, and Bob is more subtle than that. Try to imagine, if you can, the most darkly terrifying scenes from Apocalypse Now. Mix in the worst bits from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, the most stomach-churning moments of Alien, and the goriest bits of Mary Poppins. Now add the best bits of the Spanish Inquisition, the historical event, not a movie. And that gives you absolutely no idea of the full horror of the Three Rivers race. But what it does show is that you have the kind of damaged mind that skippers love to prey upon. My fellow victim, I mean crew, for the 2011 race in early June was the kind and gentle Conrad, who, like me, had crewed for Bob before and had actually come back again. That just shows how brilliantly devious Bob is. Our mission, as ever, was to navigate a 52-mile course to four points on three rivers, the Ant, the Bure, and the Thurn, in any order we chose, along the way, lowering the mast four times to shoot under bridges. The objective is to achieve all that in under 24 hours and not kill anyone or be killed, although Bob's not too fussed about that, as there are no time penalties either way. The only other obstacles are the 125 other boats in the race, all intent on skewering sailfishes on their bowsprits. Plus there are armadas of hire motor cruisers and day boats, all intent on running down the remains of sailfishes, or driving them into the banks, or crushing them, or all three, while drinking breakfast lager and bearing their tattoos. It sounds a breeze, and this year that was the extra factor, wind, lots of it. As Bobcat jostled for our 12:15 start, the last of the day, Bob, a cutlass clasped in his teeth, swung from the shroud, shouting, "Starboard on port tack, starboard on starboard tack, prepare to board, and strangely, have you ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight?" Neither Conrad nor I recognise this as a sailing command, and he's a qualified RYA dinghy instructor. With winds gusting 30 knots, some boats were already retiring as we crossed the start line, among them several Thames aerators, which are not really designed for water applications. They're like 30-foot-long spatulas with masts that touch heaven and are most often seen on trailers in big blue stockings being attended to by men in matching rugby shirts who've just leapt out of a brand new Range Rover. Not long after that, we spotted one of the largest of the sail hiring fleet with a splintered mast. By now we'd settled into our normal routine. Captain Bob, much like all proper racing skippers, ordered us to do wrong things wrongly, then criticised us for it. Later, somewhere on Lake Michigan, I think, we saw a Yare and Buer One design keelboat actually sunk. Onwards we bickered, somewhere in the night, approaching a bridge, possibly Lambeth or Putney, we snagged the end of our lowered mast over a wire fence. Sometimes Conrad threatened to get off and walk home, and I said, me too. Sometimes I threatened to walk, and Conrad said, me too. But Wily Bob knew we didn't have a clue where we were. Up some mangrove-strangled tributary of the Limpopo, in the clawing darkness of a moonless night, Bob had me tacking the Genoa with a torch held in my mouth to show the bank. I really didn't have a lot of orifices left for personal use, and taking notes was out of the question. It was a record run for Bob. We made it back to Horning around 3 a.m. after just 15 hours, an amazing 5 hours faster than ever before. But the other sailfish in the race, Nigel Atkey's Cathy, crewed by John and Guy, had beaten us by a remarkable 1 hour and 43 minutes. Conrad and I both took a tremendous amount of satisfaction from that. Indeed, that's what you call teamwork.